From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows. Hey there, children of the night. Welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host at the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and well, alongside of me this week is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-the-heart-throb of Bob After Dark, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
How's it going, Bob? How's it going there, indeed?
Oh, it's going great. Can we get a... our weekly update?
Yeah, you know what, Bob? Things have been going good this week. I'll explain the glasses later. I guess it fits the theme of today's show.
It fits the theme.
With what's going on. But yeah, good to be back here once again, Bob After Dark. Just testing everything out as far as levels go, because that's what we do live on the air.
We're on live.
Making sure everything sounds good.
I do have a slight I only have a slight feedback, that's all.
Oh, we're good there, Bob. Don't worry. Don't pay no attention to that slight
Says the guy who doesn't edit for the podcast.
Yeah, well, you know what, Bob? People want, when they hear a podcast, they want to hear the raw edit. They don't want to hear anything else as far as...
you are the wrongest person.
The whistles and bells that go into, you know, cleaning up the actual footage there. But yeah, weekend was pretty good, Bob, as we shared a show around. Once again, weekend was pretty good. Can't complain.
Did you hear anything exciting?
You know what? I helped one of our mutual friends, Alex Shrednoslak. He was working on a short piece there, so a short film, as they call it in the business. So,
oh, in the business.
Helping him out with that and making sure that's all good to go. Of course, he has to do the tough part of actually editing the thing. I just kind of stand around and make sure everything goes smoothly on set. And if you know me on a movie set, I always make sure things go smoothly, Bob. And then I went to, over the weekend to Monday down North Judson, Indiana. Not much happening in North Judson, Indiana, but sometimes...
I couldn't even tell you where North Judson is.
It's a little past Wanata, Indiana, but
Wanata?
They have a heck of a discount market there, Bob. So if you're in the market for anything that should be on discount, this is the place to go. They have a whole aisle. It's called Bailey's Discount Market. The whole aisle is canned corn. Unbelievable.
How many different canned corns, canned cream corns did you see?
Oh, well, any corn you really could think of there, Bob. I mean, they had regular corn, cream corn.
That's great, Count Panic. I'm glad to hear that you shared a corny experience. Doo-doo-tsh.
Yes, I got an earful of that one right there.
All right, my weekend update. So, full disclosure, when I'm not in Bob After Dark mode, I'm one of the costumers with the Windy City Ghostbusters in Chicago. We, you know, go and we dress up like the Ghostbuster characters from the movie. And we go raise money for the local children's hospital. We do certain events, stuff like that. And one of the things I got to run this year was we did a Ghostbusters Trivia Bowl. It was an idea I came up with, and my fellow Windy City Ghostbusters helped me kind of organize it, where we got 20 teams across North America, United States and Canada, to jump in on a Zoom call to do a trivia contest and over, you know, Ghostbusters related questions. And we had something like 15,000 people watched it, which blows my mind.
It's pretty good.
And in one night, we raised $6,000 for a handful of charities, one of which being the La Rabitas Children's Hospital in Chicago, which is the charity that the Windy City Ghostbusters represent. So that was my big like weekend thing. And it was really cool, you know, when you're, you know, working hand in hand with like Sony Pictures to make something like come together like that, my mind's still blown that it worked out like that.
How much did you raise there?
Over $6,000 for charity.
That's crazy.
I felt pretty good about that. You might be wondering why I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah, why is that, Bob?
Because it's hot.
Well, that's true. It is summertime.
You know, It's really hot, man. I'm dying the past few days of just sweat. So I looked at my wardrobe, and well, you know, I wear a lot of black and a lot of, like, you know, graphic tees, and then I'll wear a collared shirt and stuff for, you know, the show or if I'm doing a public appearance. And I said, you know what? A Hawaiian shirt buttons up the front and has a collar. I'm going to count it as perfectly acceptable to wear for Bob After Dark. And because the show's called Bob After Dark and no one's going to stop me, I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt is definitely the new spooky attire. So I mean,
is it?
My next paranormal investigation I go on, you know how I'm usually decked out in the wardrobe?
Yeah.
No, I'm going out there in a Hawaiian shirt and some stretchy shorts, and we're calling it a day, man.
That's a good look. Of course, sadly, I don't own a Hawaiian shirt, but I do got the shades on because it fits the summer mood here in the studio. So. And there's a lot of lights around here, too, so I want to make sure.
Now, you've been wearing SPF 666, right?
Yes, there you go.
I worked on that joke for a good, like, 5 minutes. Yeah. It made somebody laugh, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one.
I made somebody cackle there.
Now, have you thought about this? Have you thought about a Bob After Dark-themed Hawaiian shirt?
Ooh.
Do we know people that make Hawaiian shirts?
I do not. But if any of my viewers listening right now do custom-made Hawaiian shirts, you can contact me directly and we'll talk about it because that'd be a cool product. We have Bob After Dark t-shirts, not in mass quantity at the moment because, you know, COVID. But we're working on getting the show merchandise up and running here shortly. So when that happens, if I know somebody that can do a custom Hawaiian shirts, that'd be pretty spectacular. Vix's comments in the chat and says Panic wears his sunglasses at night.
I do. The song was based after me, I think.
Were around for, you know, pretty much that entire century. Right?
I was, you know, from, you know, Beethoven to whoever was saying that. Wasn't his name Corey? Corey something that sang it.
Corey.
I think, but
yeah.
There's a lot of Coreys in the 80s. You
was
know
that Corey Hart?
Maybe Corey Hart.
I don't know.
The 80s had at least 10 popular Coreys, so
they
it
were.
Kind of confusing.
So that's my weekend update and why I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt. So
there you go.
If this is your first time ever listening to Bob After Dark in podcast land, make sure you jump over to the Apple Podcast website for Bob After Dark and you leave us a nice 5-star review. We like to read those out loud and say that we're happy to have you. And we will do a toast to you for every 5-star comment we read. And this week we have one. It just says, great. Thanks for the show. Signed, GFan333.
All right.
Thanks.
That's a good one.
Thank you, GFan333, for the nice 5-star review.
5 stars. Now, 5 stars is hard to get, but it's nice that they leave 5 stars.
Yeah, you just leave 5 stars. Yeah. If not, Count Panic will find you.
Usually 4 stars are good, but not in this world. We want 5 stars.
We want 5-star. Yes. That's what we want. So thank you, G-Fan. Appreciate that. All right. And if this, so we're a paranormal show. We talk about legends, lore, and the supernatural. Anything spooky goes bump in the night. And we also cover weird and spooky news stories. That's how we're going to start the show off this week. And our first story, actually, I have two news stories coming from the same exact fan. And I was pretty excited about it. So real quick, we have a Facebook page dedicated to the fan, you know, the fans of the show. It's just called Children of the Night. And that's ran by fans, James Breham, Becky Hoffman. They made that, you know, during COVID for the fans to kind of come together and people share their news articles on there, the spooky ones that we can use for the show. And if you're too shy to share in the group, you could also reach me directly. These news stories can be anything from paranormal topics that, you know, make it to the mainstream media or anything of the sorts. Science stuff that's advancing, that's borderline science fiction. This one's just a pinch older, but it's still a pretty cool story nonetheless. Did you know that there was a comet that you can be seeing in the sky now, and it won't be back for 68,000 years?
I'll be around for the second time.
You'll be around. You've been around the last time, right?
Yeah, it's always cool to see that comet.
That comet is called Neowise.
Yes.
What was it like for the last Neowise?
It was amazing. You know, just standing outside with my sunglasses on, watching the comets fly by. It was pretty miraculous. So I encourage everybody that missed it this time around to catch it in 68,000 years. It should be a doozy.
So if you're looking to see it, you have till July 23rd. Today's the 20th, right?
Today's the 21st.
You got 2 more days to see this this comet.
But if you miss it, stick around for 68,000.
6,800.
6,800. Well, that makes a difference there.
Yes, it makes a big difference, man. So if you were going to be doing it, you need to be looking at the northwest sky just after sunset. You have the Arcticus star up here, you have Polaris, and then down towards the left, you'll actually be able to see the Neowise comet, and this will be the last time you see it for 6,800 years, so get on that. Thanks, Whitney, for sharing. Our next news story comes to us again from Whitney. Astronomers believe a South Pole wall, discover a South Pole wall, a gigantic structure stretching 1.4 billion light years across. It's a big thing. Mm-hmm. Spectacular 3D maps of the universe have revealed one of the biggest cosmic structures ever found, an almost inconceivably wall stretching of 1.4 billion, billion light years across and contain hundreds of thousands of galaxies.
I'm trying to follow the math here. So,
okay, hashtag Pancake. First off, we didn't get the hashtag Pancake on the first story.
No, the comment's beautiful. But
okay, that's great. That's the easiest hashtag Pancake I've ever had.
Oh, this one. How many galaxies?
Hundreds of thousands.
Jeez. Well, you know what they say, Bob. I was reading an article, and that can kind of tie into the spooky news articles, that there are more galaxies out there, alien galaxies, than thought of before. A new number they thrown out there. It's like 36.
Yeah,
alien galaxies. So maybe these are tied to that, don't you think?
I mean, it's very possible, right?
I mean, every galaxy has to have some kind of something living on it, right?
I mean, sure. I mean, if you look at our galaxy, it's mostly proven. It's not proven, but we haven't found an official, and I use the word official very loosely in quotations, we haven't found any, like, official proof that life on another planet exists. We have theories, and we have, we have speculation, and we have ideas, but we have no definitive proof that something out there exists.
Well, I don't know. I see our friend Lara Bates from the Challenger Learning Center is joining the chat here, and you know, if somebody would know about space, it would be her. So,
oh well, thank you,
Lara. Let us know. Is there alien life out there? I'm gonna get to the Challenger Learning Center and see if there's.
I haven't been there since I was in a wee lad.
You got to go back, Bob. Mm.
Mm-hmm. But we'll do a Bob After Dark field trip there.
Investigation.
So you got to think that's a lot of galaxies that are just spread out, right? And, you know, I had conversations with people before, and it's almost maddening, right? And this is where I'm going to get my soapbox just real fast.
Go ahead. It's your show. Get on the soapbox. I can't tell you to get off your soapbox.
Can you
show.
Imagine people like that legitimately still believe there's no life outside of Earth?
Yeah.
Like, okay. I'm not necessarily saying that aliens need to have the classic look, right? The big gray heads and the big black eyes and kind of waddling around. I mean, that's some of the ones, and I'm sure there's people that believe they look like reptiles or whatever Star Trek or Star Wars-esque monster you could possibly think of. But I mean, I'm sure there's possibilities for that. But you got to think that these aliens could look just like you and I, with just like purple skin or something, right?
Yeah.
But I digress about how they look. It's just the fact of the matter is that people still believe that there's no life outside of Earth, and it just makes no sense to me, right? You got to think about it, and especially with this case of this wall we found that's stretching this inconceivable size,
yeah.
And it's in there is hundreds of thousands of galaxies. That's 100,000 planets.
That's a lot.
It's all millions of planets.
Millions.
And you mean to tell me that not one of those millions of planets have not one single entity on it?
Well, didn't we design Space Force for stuff like this to go up there?
I mean, that's something for another day. But I mean, it's
we go to the moon, right?
Right.
We were supposed to be on. We did land on the moon, right?
Nah.
Okay.
Nah.
We're not gonna touch that one.
No. All right, we're good.
But apparently
we've landed on the moon. Okay. Yes, as far as everything is concerned, we landed on the moon.
And there was no aliens there.
No, there was not that we know of. Okay. Not that we know
of. And then Mars, we didn't land on. We got the rover still looking around. So yeah.
There's some weird stuff to happen with that.
Yeah. You know what the sad thing about that rover is when his batteries, or hers, I don't know if the
it came back. Remember, we covered that. You don't pay attention, do you?
The rover came back?
We talked about it. It just malfunctioned.
Oh, but it said the batteries were getting low.
Yeah, they malfunctioned. It came right back. We covered it on the show.
It's been so long, Bob.
Panic.
Ever since the hiatus, I forgot everything. So we'll have to have a marathon. We'll have to binge watch these shows to catch up to speed here.
Jeez. So no, I can't grasp that, and I can't physically come to fathom to believe that there's no life outside of our own. And that, I mean, we talk about aliens on the show, and we talk about extraterrestrials on the show and stuff. And I mean, that's fine, and I appreciate the theories that come with them. But the fact that we physically can't, physically can say that there's nothing, to me, that's such like a small mindset when there's something so much vast out there, right? So.
Yeah.
Well,
one day we'll meet them, right?
Someday. I mean, there's people out there that believe they met them now. I mean, that's the people's accounts can't be, no pun intended, counts, get
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
People's accounts can't be, you have to take those into consideration. You can't just say that everybody that says they had experiences are wrong or whatever. So,
remember the simple days, Bob, before the pandemic where we were just going to storm Area 51?
I remember. Then they had the storm the lock. Remember?
Yeah, they were
going to storm lock us,
and then we all went back inside our houses never to do any of that stuff once again. But maybe one day.
We could do storm WJOB. You guys come stand out by the window. Don't actually storm it. No. Don't do that. They're disinfecting.
And social distance yourself.
Right. Well, if you guys hang out by the window and just wave, make sure you're standing 6 feet apart. Wear your mask.
Yeah. Maybe to a car.
If you want to drive up by the car and just kind of wave at us, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, let's do that.
Instead of storm WJOB, why don't you just come say hi to WJOB?
Yeah. Give a friendly nod.
We're here every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Yeah. Bob After Dark. Okay. So that's my second story, sure. And I appreciate it, Count Panic. Now, for my third story, it actually comes to us from our now again, off again co-host, Steve.
Yeah.
Steve actually calls me the other day, and then Steve calls me. We talk regularly, weekly a lot, and several times a week he calls and we talk for hours. But Steve called me the other day and he's like, hey, I have a weird question for you. And I'm like, oh boy, what could this possibly lead to, And he's like, we haven't heard anything about crop circles in a long time. Do you think they just stopped? And then he said, we don't hear about on major news stories or we don't hear about it anymore, especially with how big social media is. We don't talk about abductions, alien abductions anymore.
Yep.
And he said, why do you suppose that is? You would think with the influx of technology and the influx of social media, we would be hearing about these things. I was driving home and I was like, I don't really know. It's a good question. My theory about the alien abductions is probably people don't want to come forward because, generally people don't take their accounts serious. So maybe people are just tired of being ridiculed. But on the same end, we don't hear about the abduction stories, but we certainly hear a lot about cryptid sightings and paranormal stuff going on. So I don't know why we don't get one or the other. Maybe that's a question from Brent over at Hysteria 51 podcast. But Steve sent me this article. Oh, I got to tell you how I theorized.
Yeah.
My theory about why we're not seeing crop circles anymore. And this is my legitimate true to life answer. I said, maybe they came here and they just got really tired of being ignored, or they realized how dumb we are as a species. we're not the most friendliest species on the in existence, right? Yeah. Human beings as a whole are pretty dumb. We're very aggressive and angry and stuff. If I was a visitor coming from a foreign planet and I saw how the human race acts, especially amongst ourselves and how we treat each other, I wouldn't want to leave messages either.
No.
I'm inviting, some of these could be legitimately inviting you to paradise and y'all are going to come there and just try to goof it up. And that's a soapbox for another day. So those are my two theories. And then lo and behold, Steve sent me an article and a new crop circle popped up on a farm north of France, and in a WGN radio segment, they talk about what do these possibly mean. And this new crop circle is fascinating, right? Because the other ones are like triangles and circles and whatnot. This one, and I'll definitely share a photo on the Bob After Dark page, it looks like an aperture for a camera. You know how you have like the, yeah. That's exactly what it looks like. It's a circle, and then it's got the crescents that kind of look like they're enclosing to capture light. It's kind of scary. I'm not going to lie. Because the other ones, you ever see like the movie Signs and stuff? I mean, they're a little hokey, right? But it, well, I mean,
Mel, don't say that. Mel Gibson's not a hokey guy at all. Come on.
So that's, this one looks like definitely some like aperture stuff. And it's really, it's kind of off-putting. Because you're just like, did you guys take a picture? Do you want us to take a picture?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's just scary, you know. Hashtag panic.
That's a good observation. You're right. In the day and age where everything, we know about everything, it seems we're finding out less and less about crop circles and alien life out there. So, but then again, with anything about the alien and the things out there in the deep space, basically maybe left best to not really talk about too much. They like to keep those things secret, Bob, so.
Mm.
Maybe it's best not to find out too much about it, or you might be getting a knock at your door.
From who, Panic? Are you coming to knock on my door?
From the people that want to keep this a secret.
I've been waiting for you.
Yeah. You know, for the people that want to cover this up. Because there's a lot of people. Some stuff that's not meant to get out there, I don't think, you know?
I mean, it's possible, right?
I mean, they talk about cover-ups and everything, and you got to start to believe some of that, too. I mean, there's stuff that we're just not... they're not just telling us about it. That's the facts of life there, Bob.
The facts of life.
Another TV classic. Yeah. You take the good, you take the bad. Take them both. And
there you have it, the facts of life.
Crop circles.
Thank you for that, Cow Panic. We just, you know, scored over 1 million views with your...
That's two TV theme songs referenced in 2 minutes there.
How about that? What's the third one? You know, Panic, sometimes I just have to sit back and wonder whatever happened to predictability, yeah. The milkman, the paperboy, and even crop circles.
Yeah. We shoehorned that one in. That was
See, did you like that one, or did you feel like it was forced?
It was a little forced.
It was a little forced.
Yeah, it was
okay,
a little forced. The two ones just came naturally. But we'll count it.
You got to do things in threes, right? Everything comes with best of threes. Okay. That relates back to the Three's Company.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. I'm moving on, All right, so the last thing we want to do before we jump into the lore of the week is something we do here on Bob After Dark that we've been trying to do since the beginning, but now we're finally getting some headroom. And that is, I want to share your paranormal experiences, your ghost stories, your weird family ghost that might be haunting you from generation to generation, or, you know... We've had UFO sightings. I want to hear your stories. I want to highlight what's going on with you. And I got a lot of people that wrote in about this stuff, and I'm very excited to share this one. This is actually coming from a new... this one's actually coming from a newer fan. His name's Peter, and Peter is from...
Hello, Peter.
Hi, Peter. Peter's from New York.
New York. Yeah. The Big Apple.
The Big Apple. Not the Small Apple.
No,
or the
Big
Medium Apple.
I was
the
about
big
to say...
Apple. Yeah.
I used to call Chicago the Big Apple, then somebody told me that was wrong.
That is wrong. Yeah. What's Chicago? I know it's the Windy City, but is it the Big Easy? Is that...
No, that's...
What's
that's
that one?
New Orleans.
No, that is New Orleans. Yeah. So what's Chicago?
The
just
Windy
the Windy City.
City.
That's it.
You can't have more than one name for a city. You just gotta... The Windy City.
Fair enough. Okay. And why didn't I say it was the Big Easy? Anyway, let's move on. So the story comes from Peter, and he actually talks about working in a haunted library, or what might be a spooky event in a library. I'm going to be reading this word from word, so let's just dive right in. He says, well, settle in, Mr. Anderson, because he's like, hey, you want to hear a spooky story? I'm like, man, I'd love to hear that.
Of course.
He puts on sunglasses. He's like, sorry, I couldn't resist the Matrix reference, and I'm sure you've gotten it a bajillion times. And yes, full disclosure, I have. Anyway, from 2010 to 2014, I worked in a library. I'm not going to name which one, as I'm not actually, I'm actually pretty bold at that, supposed to advertise that the library is haunted, but it's in the lower Hudson Valley region of New York, and it's one of the oldest libraries in the state. There were always some weird stuff that went on there. At night, when closing up, clerks and pages, the two only two librarians on staff, were the director and the assistant director when I worked there, and they never did late nights. Would always get weird vibes in this historic building. The maintenance guy claims to have found doors that he left locked and closed the exact opposite, the lights that he would turn on if turned off, etc. You know, the usual, right? In 2010, they were conducting interviews for a new director near the circulation desk where I worked. There was a display case, and one of the board members displayed her collection of nutcrackers for the holiday season. As the candidate, who would eventually become the director, was walking past, one of the glass shelves dislodged and dropped the nutcrackers. It was holding the nutcrackers below. Some were mildly chipped and scratched, but no real damage. That should have been an omen, I think. Anyway, around this time, I was fancying myself a ghost hunter, as most people are at some point, I believe. I built an ion counter out of a smoke detector and a multimeter. Man, that's brilliant. And even put it inside my very first PKE meter prop, and it looked like the Extreme Ghostbusters PKE, and you could see some pictures of it if you look at my Facebook albums. And had joined a team that disbanded soon after it was the one moved as the leader moved out west, and started a team with my friends, which also disbanded, but there was some infighting involved, which happens in the paranormal.
As always, right?
Right. Yeah. Some of those friends claim to be sensitives, and I can neither confirm nor deny these claims. All I know is that at the group consisting of my friends, some of who worked at the library with me, managed to convince our director to let us investigate. I am so proud of you, Peter. We knew something was up. There was a bunch of weird stuff going on. Some of the psychic people claim that there was a spirit of a little boy who happened to be tormented by a malevolent spirit that was also in the library. We managed to divine a name for the little boy, who shall again remain anonymous, and we promised we wouldn't tell anyone who he was. It was around then that someone felt something with the malevolent spirit, who we think was someone who used to live at the historic house across the street from the library. And, oh, here we go, sorry. And someone said that he doesn't like light. One friend started feeling like he was being attacked, though it could be very well been a panic attack in retrospect. So I suggested turning on some lights. We did. He felt better. We called it a night. Fast forward a few months, and I managed to use my influence at the library to let the director allow the other group I'm a part of to investigate as well. They had an EMF reader with an alarm on it, and it would set in the staff room. At some point in the night, the alarm went on, that meter started pinging, and whatever we do, we can't get it to stop. I asked teammates that were with us last time to step out of the room because we promised not to reveal the name of the little boy. I addressed the spirit by name. We'd come to use the last name and said, if that's making noise, please make it stop. And just like that, Bob, just like that, the alarm stopped. I like to think I'm fairly skeptical on that. There are usually mundane explanations to stories like that that seem supernatural, but that one, I can't explain. Thanks, Peter.
I can't explain it either, Bob. How can you explain it?
That's a bit weird. It's a weird thing. It's a weird situation.
What do you do in that case? You just, and what I figure out, Bob, with all these couple stories we have been putting out here, my technique once this starts to happen is maybe just leave altogether and just
bounce.
Yeah.
Ta-ta, I'm out.
But you, being the investigator, being the investigator you are, you would stay back and investigate, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would, you know, do just that. I'd stick around. As far as his story is concerned, it's very well possibly might be something that's kicking around. And the fact that they were able to agitate it with light makes, you know, perfect sense. And I mean, you have to understand that every living person has some sort of power or some sort of desire that the dead want, right? And the idea is that we hold energy over the dead. Some people may not know that. Some people may not know how to exercise those strengths that we have. And the idea is that you can disband anything, or you can kind of manipulate it or have it stop when you need it to. And I've had experiments, especially, and I always go back to this one because it really fascinates me the most, is that when we play poker with the ghosts up in the Crown Point Jail, when we've been there a few times, the spirits, you have to understand too, are people. At the end of the day, they were people, even though they might not be with us anymore. They were people, and they just, you know, they're going to listen to you if they're making you mad, for the most part. There's times when they're a little bit more malevolent, but you know, it's easy just to say, hey, cut that out, or, you know, say something a little bit more aggressive, which I won't repeat on air. But I mean, I've had that before where I'm, you know, dealing with something and that something really bugs me and, you know, I tell it to stop.
Now you're just firm with it though. You're not really yelling, more so just being firm.
I've met investigators who take the really aggressive approach, you know.
They just yell at them?
They yell. Oh, my God. I've been on those investigations. I mean, there's...
That seems like they're backfiring you. I mean, if you yell at the spirit...
Oh, it has. I've seen them backfire. Yeah.
That just doesn't seem like a good call there whatsoever. I mean, not a smart thing. Even me, even a modest investigator like myself, knows that that's not the best technique to really have there.
Right. I don't know. I think, but again, there's something to both ways. You could either, you know, be the cautious one and, you know, but you got to be firm. And that's, I always like to, that's just the way it is, right?
I like to be gentle with the spirits, you know?
And that's the way I like to, too. You know, the spirits at the end of the day were people, and I'm a very respectful guy, or at least I like to think I'm a respectable guy. I like to give people respect, and just because they're not with us, just because they're, you know, just because they're not with us, just because they're not hanging around, doesn't mean anything.
No, not at all. You got to be respectful. Maybe offer the spirit some cheese curds in a way. That's a, you know...
Yeah, I mean, going around kind
building
of panic,
a bridge,
it's like
building a bridge.
That's the way to do it. I mean, people leave offerendums. That's different cultures do that. That's where they leave out something where the spirit can get in contact with it, and you know, they use it and they kind of use it to calm things down. I'm just curious, Count Panic, when it is your time to, you know, dissolve into dust. If you want cheese curds to be your offerendum, is that what you want?
You know, that's not bad. No, that's not bad at all. I think I'll take that. The cheese curds offer, maybe. I don't know, maybe a spotted cow to go with it. That might be a good combo right there.
I feel like you just named 98% of the Wisconsin ghosts out there. All right, we have a phone call.
I was going to say, the demographic, too. I think our big fan base is,
we
love cheese curds.
We
and they
are
cow.
We are very much loved in Wisconsin.
Very much
and
so.
We very much love going there. That's... our first event was in Wisconsin, I think. No, it wasn't our last event. But
Close.
We've been to a lot of Wisconsin events. Who do we have on the phone?
Got John on the line here.
Hello, John. You're on the air.
And you're loved in the region, Bob.
You know, John, I wonder sometimes.
I heard everybody's going to be lined up there on Pierogi Fest to watch you guys in the parade this year. So.
Well, John, you're a little late for that one.
No Pierogi Fest this year?
That was canceled. That was should have been last week.
Well, no, it would have been
this weekend. Yeah, it was canceled, John.
Right. No, I'm just just playing with you. But whenever you went on a investigation, was there any time when you couldn't come up with a conclusion and you had to go back several times? Or did you basically wrap up a something in a few hours or one day?
Okay, that's a good question, John. Now, as a good scientist, I use that term as much as I possibly can. As a scientist, you want to experiment more than once. You don't want to just do it one and done and be done with it. Now, understandably so, you're not going to get into the same exact... Most times, you're not going to get in the same exact place multiple nights to do an investigation. So sometimes you kind of have to wrap it up after a one and done, and you just kind of have to go with the evidence that you have, and you really got to be thorough. But then there's times... I've been on investigations in the same exact place. I was just talking to Count Panic over here about a couple that I've been to multiple times, sometimes multiple weeks, and I've dropped by, you know, the same spots that might have been strange throughout the investigation. And I'll give you an example, the Crown Point Jail. That's just one that I've been to a lot recently because quarantine. You know, we pop in there and there's certain spots in the jail that, you know, the first time I'm there and I know I'm going back because it's local and it's easily accessible. So I might make a mental note and say, oh, I'm going to go check that out again next time I'm here and see if I can get the same results. And then, you know, maybe I can either explain what we have or we don't, you know? So that's to answer your question. I mean, as much as I wish I could investigate the same thing a few times over, but unfortunately can't do that all the time. So while I'm there, I want to get as much information as I possibly can.
Yeah, I was listening to Peter from New York there, kind of you know, hit the question mark where, you know, similar to his question about if you guys go out, you know, and numerous amount of times or just, you know, make a conclusion at one visit or whatever. So, but yeah, answer my question.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much for the call, John. I really appreciated that.
Bob, we'll see you. Take care.
Thank you. Do you want to be like John and call into the show and ask a paranormal question? Or would you like to share a paranormal experience? Or perhaps you would just like to compliment me or Count Panic on our summer gear tonight?
Yeah, I mean, well, mine's pretty easy. It's just a pair of sunglasses, Bob. But you have the very cool Hawaiian shirt.
Oh, thank you. Our phone number is 219-845-1100. And if you're listening in podcast land, just know you can call anytime that we're live on the show, and then you can hear your voice on the podcast version. Now, we have a lot more people listening podcast than they do live, and we don't know how many people listen on the radio, but...
Yeah, the radio, of course, tune in on there, but that's going to confuse some people because they might think when they hear the episode, if they listen to the podcast, they call.
Obviously, the podcast isn't live. You know, that's what I'm saying. If you're listening to podcast, like,
what if I call during the podcast? Can I get through to you?
You'll get to somebody here at WJOB if somebody's here.
I'm going
to
try.
Who's here on a Friday night at 9 p.m.? Or Saturday night or whenever?
I don't think anybody.
Maybe okay, so you'll just you'll be it. Ringing to nobody.
Yep. Somebody answers.
Or unless you call at any point. If you want to talk to me and Count Panic, Tuesday night's 9 p.m.
Or online.
Chat with us there. I mean, you could chat with us anytime. That outlet's available.
We'll give our personal phone numbers later in the show.
No, I mean, unless you have my personal number now, chances are you probably won't get that.
Who are you going to call?
Somebody else. All right. So thank you so much for sharing that story, Peter. Do you have a paranormal story you would like to share and be just like Peter? Please, 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 please contact us. You can either call live on the show and we can talk about it on the show if you don't want to feel like doing that. Drop us a line, bob@bobafterdark.com. You can hit us up on the Facebook page, Bob After Dark. You can join the Facebook fan group, Children of the Night. That's a good time. Or you can DM us on Instagram at @bobafterdark.
Are we on TikTok too or no?
No, but I have had a conversation with somebody that wanted us to start one. So I might start us a TikTok. I just said I wasn't the right demographic. The demographic for TikTokers are typically young or pretty. And I don't know about you, but I'm neither of those.
And it's about dancing too, right? You got to have some moves.
You don't have to dance. I mean, you just got to have something to say.
We got stuff to say.
Do we?
We can't dance, though. That's the problem.
No. No. Or cats. There's lots of cat TikToks.
Oh, that's...
But we're neither one of us are cats.
No, that's true, too. Well, we're good with the Instagram and Facebook. We'll keep it at that.
Absolutely. All right, Count Panic. Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick couple-second break. The live show people, stick around. We'll be right back. For the podcast people, stick around. You're about to hear some words from a podcast that you should be checking out. Stay tuned.
This is Mike.
This is Jacob.
And this is Matt.
We are Moth Boys,
a podcast on cryptids, conspiracies, and the unknown.
Unknown.
You can catch us every other Monday on, actually, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thank you.
And we're back. I'm standing up for a second. My back's kind of acting
amazing.
Up there. Did you?
I'm always impressed about how you worked that into the show.
I mean, at some point, you might actually add a.
I put a graphic up, so it's little by little. I put a graphic up, and then we'll figure up something for next week.
No, because you know, podcasters, and if there are other podcasters listening, and you guys want to share your bumper with us. Yeah. We trade promos. So just hit us up and you don't have to be a paranormal podcast to share, but probably preferable.
It could be about
if you're running a quilting podcast, we're probably not the show to advertise on there, which, you know what? I take that back. You could probably enjoy the promo and maybe one of my listeners will enjoy listening to a quilting podcast.
Quilting, a lot of people do like quilting.
That's what I'm saying. There might be some crossover there.
Yeah.
Creepy quilting.
Oh.
Ooh.
Creepy quilting. That's a good company.
Do a crossover. Yeah. Crossover episode.
All right. Somebody start that up.
Absolutely. SoCal Panic. Yeah. You might be wondering why I'm wearing this Hawaiian shirt. I know we went over this, but
it's because you're hot and sweaty. That's the main thing, right?
I am hot, but okay. And the thing is, we have fans from all over the world, right? And I was complaining about the heat to one of my fans, and they live in the American Southwest, you know, New Mexico, Arizona, yeah. and Nevada. And they said, "Hey, stop complaining. It's like we're living in a molten core." And I said, all right, well, I can understand that, and I could totally get it, because I am a total baby when it comes to the heat, and that must really, really be unfortunate for you that you have to deal with that heat. So this week, I picked out a being from the American Southwest, and this episode is actually going to be dedicated to our fans out in that region that deal with the heat day in and day out, henceforth the Hawaiian shirt.
You know what? And we complain a lot about the hotness here, Bob, but a lot of other places, you know, this is just temporary. We got a few 90-degree days here and there throughout the summer. Some people have this all year around. I just don't know how they do it, but a good theme today, good theme.
Yeah. And before we get to the exact story that I'm going to share on the episode, I actually wanted to share a brief Navajo tribe story.
Okay.
And the both creatures we're talking about tonight are from Navajo lore. And the first one is actually called the Hoofer. And this story comes to us from Jeff Lewis. He's the lead over at the Arizona Ghostbusters. Good guy. He does a lot of good for charity and stuff. And if you guys are interested in checking that stuff out, especially if you're out in that neck of the woods, go check out the Arizona Ghostbusters.
Arizona Ghostbusters.
And Jeff shared the story with me because the initial story we were talking about, I like to reach out to locals if I have a good connection out there, which I have connections everywhere. So I usually like to reach out to the local that I might know. A lot of times they're Ghostbusters because that's who I socialize with when I'm not Bob After Darking. So I reach out and I said, "Hey, what do you know about this topic we're talking about?" And Jeff chimed in and said, "You know, to be completely honest, I don't know more than what the online says about it, because that's pretty much the story. But he did tell me that he had a little bit more knowledge of this thing called the Hoofer.
The Hoofer.
And the Hoofer could have legitimately made on the top five from last week's episode, because there's not a lot of information about him. In fact, it's mostly kept within the reservation.
You mean the Hoofer could have been lumped in with the disco Polish demon?
Yeah, because there's not a lot of information about it, but it's a really interesting entity. So he was telling me a little bit about it, and he was saying that he said one night he was hanging out on the res with a friend, and outside of the res, there is an old boarded up monastery that Jeff said he was pretty, you know, focused on. He said, "That's kind of weird to be hanging out on the reservation." And his friend said they got a little worried and freaked out and told him the story of the Hoofer. And apparently this Hoofer was basically like a Minotaur that was either summoned or brought forward by the local tribes that were at like the Arizona area when major religions started coming to the United States and were, you know, desperately trying to convert them over. The story goes that this Minotaur creature thing, this Hoofer, was summoned and actually destroyed the inside of the monastery, and it actually remains to this day. And it, you know, it just kind of ruins a lot of things. And he was adding at the end of the night when they were driving back, and there was a two-lane road, and in the pitch black in the middle of the night, there was suddenly a whole herd of cows in the road.
Really?
And according to him, his friend was absolutely scared. And that's the story of the Hoofer. It's just this Navajo tribe creature, which that I'm assuming that's the res he was referring to, because we were going back and forth about the Navajo tribes that are there. So if it's not Navajo, I do apologize. But it is definitely one of the tribes that were there, and it's this entity. And I asked Jeff, I said, you know, was there any stories about it being summoned? And he said, I don't know if it was summoned or if it just appeared to protect the natives being scared of being thrown in this monastery to be tortured and converted. And he was telling me that there's actually video evidence out there of this entity going and destroying construction sites and construction workers. And Jeff adds in there, and this line when we were going back and forth really made my skin crawl. And he's like, you know, I really hope that it's just a simple thing where we go and find somebody with a hoofer mask and we pull it off. And I'm like, what if
Scooby-Doo?
And he's like, I'm like, well, what if it's not a hoofer mask? And he's like, then I'm going to be scared. And I said, man, I'm right there with you. So that's a quick little brief story of the hoofer. And I just want to thank Jeff Lewis and from the Arizona Ghostbusters for.
So where do we rank the hoofer? Let's kind of combine last week's episode a little bit with the hoofer right here.
Yeah.
Does the hoofer rank up there high for you? Or are you still.
That thing's horrifying.
Horrifying. So out of all the.
I mean, there's actual, like, if there's video evidence of this thing just going and destroying construction sites and hurting construction workers, it's like a physical thing.
So this is the most dangerous.
That's probably the most dangerous out of the batch, other than maybe the Polish disco demon.
Well, he'll scare you in other ways, that's for sure. Be careful of him.
Absolutely. But the actual thing we were going to talk about, and what the main topic of this discussion is tonight, is the Mogollon monster. And I want to point out how Mogollon is spelled, because it doesn't look the way it's spelled. I had to, because I was going to pronounce it Mogollon. Mm-hmm. It's Mogollon. Mogollon. But it's pronounced Mogollon.
I'm not even going to try to pronounce it.
No, I couldn't, but that's how you do it. And it's two different ways you could say it. You could either say Mogollon or Mogollon.
Mogollon. Mogollon sounds Mogollon, ritzier, it's
a bit more, you know. Yeah. But anyway, the Mogollon monster. And this is a good one for you, Count Panic, because the Mogollon monster is basically the Navajo area of Arizona's Bigfoot.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So let's talk a little bit about the Mogollon monster, right? So this particular creature stands at about 7 feet tall, is bipedal, means it walks on two upright legs. It has black or reddish brown fur, huge red glowing eyes, and a terrible, terrible stench about it. Now, there's a couple different stories about how the Mogollon monster kind of came to be, one of which was that there was a tormented native bent on revenge. It was, and that's a few different rhetorics to that story, and one of which was that this was a prehistoric tribe who, for untold reasons, exiled their chief. The chief called upon the spirits and was transformed into this, you know, this creature. This creature also goes by the name, by the way, the Hirsutei Boogeyman. That's the Hirsutei Boogeyman, who basically came back to the tribe after he was exiled and, you know.
Yeah.
Eventually was let back in. In other versions, the tribe's medicine man actually performed the transformation on himself and wanted to basically get the abilities of a monster to go and try to take on the chief of the tribe, because the chief actually stole the medicine man's wife. And in doing so...
Never do that.
No. And in doing so... may have become the very first skinwalker.
That's terrifying.
That's horrifying. Yeah. Further variations, and these ones get a little bit stranger, and I don't know if I believe in this part of the lore, as I do believe that maybe somebody with a lot of power to them was actually able to do it. One of which was a pioneer who was a victim of the native attack. He escaped into the woods, but then was cursed by the spirits and went insane. And then in another version of that story, the monster is a phantom of a pioneer who was transformed into that for punishment of the murdering of a native woman. And then he was hung in a tree by his hands and stretched to the height of 8 feet, skinned alive and left to die. damned by the spirits, his ghost continues to roam the woods as tragically misnamed Skinwalker.
That is tragic indeed. So you're telling me this is the first variation of this creature that we ever kind of encountered here.
It's very much possible. Huh. One of the biggest stories of the an encounter here, and it's regularly told by the local Boy Scout troop there, because the initial like sighting of this thing was by Boy Scouts. And what it is that the local Boy Scout summer camp, and it's involved with a Arizona pioneer by the name of Bill Spade. Spade supposedly built a log cabin adjacent to what is now Camp Geronimo, a scout facility. And Spade was attacked one night by the monster, who left no trace of his victim but Spade's face, which was torn off and left hanging from a tree. The cabin remained for decades afterward, and the Mogollon monster could often be spotted loitering nearby, waiting for an inhabitant to deface. So that's like a local story that the Boy Scouts share with one another. You were a scout.
I was a scout indeed, but we'd have to deal with skinwalkers. We stayed away from those types of things. But if someone's going to stop a skinwalker, it's going to be the Boy Scouts of America. I guarantee you that.
In 1903 is one of the earliest actually written accounts of this monster. And back it was written in the Arizona Republican, and it was written by a visitor into Arizona by the name of I.W. Stevens. And Stevens described this entity that he ran across within the Grand Canyon area in Arizona. And he's described it as a wild man. Stevens described the wild man as having long white hair and matted beard and reached to his knees. And when he approached to take a closer look, Stevens saw that the wild man wasn't much of a man, but more of a creature. He wore no clothes, and upon his fingers, there were more like taloned claws that were 2 inches long. And it was a coat of gray hair that covered his body, and there was a spot of dirty skin showing. And then it was said that it could have been, he describes it because there was stories of Sasquatch back then. He described it in his writings back then as like an elderly Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sasquatches, let's talk about that for 1 second if I get off track here. Mm-hmm. They do age.
Yes.
So there's children Sasquatches.
Sasquatch eye.
Sasquatch. What is the term?
I think Sasquatches is the proper
Sasquatchies,
term.
Sasquatchies, Sasquatch eye.
Sasquatch eye.
They can be families, right? Sometimes it's just one lone Sasquatch walking around the woods, but
yeah.
There have been known families of Sasquatch, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's possible that...
That's this, heartwarming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this one's ripping off people's faces. by the way, well, I just want to give a quick shout out to
this part.
I just want to give out this shout out to the person that writes for Weird Arizona for coming up with some of that information for me. So thank you, Weird Arizona.
Of course, I'm not defending the bad Sasquatches. I mean, not all Sasquatch are bad, right? We got to talk about that. So the ones that rip your faces off definitely should be taken down if they're going to do that. But the nice ones out there, the family Sasquatch out there. You got to look out for those types of Sasquatch.
Yes.
Just my little PSA out there, Bob.
Here is another eyewitness account. And he is this gentleman by the name of Don Davis. Mm-hmm. Don Davis is a cryptozoologist who apparently came in contact with the monster back in the 1940s. Again, this is a Boy Scout story. Davis said he had witnessed a tall, hairy beast during a Boy Scout trip in the mid-1940s when he was about 13 years old. As he and his fellow scouts were camping near Tonto Creek, something in the night woke him up rummaging through the boy's belongings. When Davis called out to the noisemaker, who he thought was a fellow scout, the figure approached him and stood over the sleeping bag, and then Davis described what he saw, and he says, and I quote, "There, standing less than 4 feet in front of me, was a monster-like man. The creature was huge. His eyes were deep and set, hard to see, but they seemed expressionless. His chest, shoulders, and arms were massive, especially the upper arms, easily upwards of 6 inches in diameter, perhaps much, much more." And Davis then gone on to say that the monster had an incredible odor about it.
Well, that would be a kind of obvious there too. I mean, elderly monster such as that, you would expect something like that coming from it, right?
No, you
don't expect to smell like roses.
No, but you know what this reminds me of, Count Panic?
What?
The Florida skunk ape.
I remember you see some things I don't remember there, Bob, but wait. I do remember you talking about the Florida skunk ape.
We did talk about the skunk ape, and it's very much on the same page, except the skunk ape was more voyeuristic in his intentions of just kind of hanging out and watching people sleep.
The peeping Tom,
right. And the Magian monster, full on face ripping off entity.
Yes. I mean, at one point, you know, even peeping Toms can be creepy, but at least they know not to rip your face off.
Now, I got a question for you.
Sure.
From a scout's point of view.
I am a scout.
You remember that guy we met at Haunted Hammond last year when we did that event, and he was a scout leader, and he was talking about Sasquatching?
Yeah, you know what? I remember.
Is that a thing you guys talk about in the scouts? Because apparently I was in the wrong scouts, because I wasn't a Boy Scout.
Well, I think it just goes along with... It wasn't something that we just had meetings about. We didn't have
Did you guys have like a Boy Scout? Did you have a Bigfoot like merit badge?
No, there wasn't, sadly.
Okay, because I was going to say, if you have that, I need that merit badge off your sash.
But
man.
I think it goes along with the scouts that are into camping and hiking in the woods.
Yes.
And what's in the woods that people talk about a lot, that's a mysterious creature, Bigfoot. So I think it's kind of like those go.
Did you guys use those as like ghost stories more or less?
Yeah, we told ghost stories.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that like your guys' like thing, or did you guys actually have like protocol if you came across a Sasquatch?
No, there was no protocol. you're right. I think that they should go back and look upon that, because you know there's protocols for wild raccoons or skunks. Why not a wild Bigfoot? So yeah, if there's any scout troop leaders listening to the show right now, maybe work that into the next meeting. Sasquatch safety, just in case. You never know. But other than that, it wasn't really something that we talked about too much. Maybe on a camping trip or on a hike, but we never spent the meetings just talking about Bigfoot. But be interesting, Bob. Maybe they could get a merit badge in Bigfoot hunting.
That's great. And specifically, Boy Scouts in the Arizona area can go get a Magian hunting merit badge.
Well, and over there, too, isn't it's part, I mean, around here, the Indiana Dunes is where we like to camp out, as far as, you know, one of the places scouts go. Not Bigfoot, not really known throughout the Indiana Dunes area, if I'm correct. I mean, you never know. Could be out there. Just from my recollection, there's no such stories about Bigfoot being in Indiana Dunes.
No, there are stories of Bigfoot in Indiana, but this is, again, different.
Yeah.
We're trying to figure out about the Sasquatch family, but this is specifically about the Magian monster here. Now, there is a Magian monster research society. You can go check that website out at themagianmonster.com, and they meet and they talk, and one of the people in charge is named Mitchell Waite. And unfortunately, he did pass away last year, but his partner, Susan Ferns, continues with their effort, and they keep, you know, searching as much as they possibly can. And there's been recent sightings as early as the past year. There was a article on Cryptozoology News last year from a young lady who said she actually saw the thing on its knees drinking water, making noises like a pig, and come to find out, it didn't turn out to be a pig. We got a call.
We do. It's our good friend Jack here.
Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Panic.
How's it going?
Hey, Jack. How have you been?
I'm pretty good.
What's on your mind tonight, Jack?
So it's actually Sasquatch, singular.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so what do you call a group of Sasquatch?
It's Sasquatch. A group of them is just Sasquatch.
You know what? We're going to change that, because you got the mouse and mice thing. We're going to call them Sasquatch Eye. That's Bob After Dark is coining that term in the cryptozoology community. Quatch Eye.
Bob, I don't know if you would want to do that, because according to many people I've interviewed, Sasquatch is actually an intelligent being. They're very close to intelligence with us. They have their own culture. They have their own language.
Yep.
And they say that they want to be called Sasquatch, even a group of them.
Oh, maybe so. We'll have a conversation. By the way, if you guys don't know Jack calling in, Jack is one of Chicago's most profound paranormal investigators and researchers. Jack's a dear friend of mine. We talk as much as we possibly can. We're living in a COVID world now, so there's no meetings. Yeah. But Jack and I go on investigations. We had a beer at Chet's once. It was a good time. So, and before we continue, Jack, before I forget, because we're going to talk a little bit more, I want to hear about your book. So before you hang up, let's talk about the book. But anyway, what news you got for me on the Mogollon Monster?
The what monster?
What we're talking about, the Mogollon Monster. I thought you had some information for me.
The scoop.
Because usually you call and you lay something out for me that I had no idea about.
That's actually what I wanted to say, though.
The Sasquatch thing. Okay, thanks, Jack. Okay, let's talk about your book real quick, because I can't have you in the studio yet because of COVID, but let's talk about the book. How's the book coming along?
Sure, the book is still coming along. It's coming along well, slowly, ever since the pandemic. It's a little bit slower now, but it's definitely coming along. I've interviewed a couple more people, and it's been fantastic. I mean, their experiences. I should probably say just very briefly to the listeners.
No, you're right. My book.
My book is about a being. We don't know if it's a cryptid or a interdimensional entity, but it's described as very emaciated looking. It's very pale white, and it's usually nude. And it's usually seen around the Midwest, kind of lurking around rivers or lurking around caves or cemeteries.
Did you just describe Count Panic?
That's very close. Right?
I was going to say, you just described Count Panic on a Thursday night.
Very close.
Sorry.
Count Panic during the sunlight.
That's what I'm saying.
Daytime Count Panic.
But a lot of people have reported this this being around, especially around the Midwest, but really around the country. And I'm kind of tracing it back to ancient folklore, where people have seen similar creatures. So hearing firsthand accounts, interviewing people, has just been this really transcendental experience.
All right, Jack, before I let you go, I want your input on this, because lots of people have different opinion on what exactly the Sasquatch is. People think it's an interdimensional traveling entity. Some people say that it's some sort of alien prisoner and the aliens dropped it off here on Earth and Earth is the prison for it. Missing link, just another cryptid that we can't explain. What's your opinion, your professional opinion?
You know, it's really hard to say. I can't give a definite answer, but based on the many people I have spoken to, it seems like the Sasquatch has evolved alongside us, albeit in a different capacity. They are a more spiritual culture, and they're able to travel between worlds. Like I said, they have their own culture. They have their own language, and they just kind of stay away from people for various reasons. Probably for obvious reasons.
I would stay away from us, too. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Jack. We appreciate that.
Hey, thanks, guys. It was great calling. I miss you guys. Glad you're back.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that.
Thank you, Jack, there.
You know, appreciate Jack.
Yeah.
Jack comes in and, like, I know a lot about the paranormal. Yeah. I do. Like, that's what I know. But if, like, I know a lot, Jack knows just a pinch more. He is so intelligent. Like, I can message Jack and be like, what do you think about this story? And Jack either knows about it, researched it, investigated it, whatever. He's great. Great resource to have. And I'm looking forward to having that when that book comes out, because it'll be a great read, knowing him.
Indeed, it's going to be a great book. But I got to ask you, Bob.
Yeah, hit me, Panic.
I did, talking about this the story here, and he was talking about, you know, Sasquatch are highly intelligent, right?
Yeah.
Very smart
entities,
yeah. You know. I did see a documentary on the Sasquatch, and it was funny because it's this one Sasquatch. He gets taken in by a family, and they kind of like live together. So it very smart entities indeed.
Are you referring to Harry and the Hendersons?
Harry and Henderson. You know what? It may have been Harry and the Hendersons, but was that wasn't a documentary?
No. Oh, okay. That was a Hollywood produced film.
Very smart indeed. Smart film.
Made the best Sasquatch film of all time. I don't know.
Oh, jeez. So without further ado, my last note is just the Mogollon monster basically just being another species of the Bigfoot. And that gets to the question of, are there underspecies to the Bigfoot, or are they just different entities altogether that just kind of look alike? And that's, I guess, where the classification comes. And now there's people out there that are, you know, Bigfooters. They study the idea of Sasquatch, and albeit I know the stuff, but I'm not as well versed on it as those people are. And if they do exist, it would make sense that the different cultures that they're a part of adapt to the different cultures around them. Does that make sense? If there is an entity hanging out in the Navajo native area, and it was angry that, you know, if it's the same thing as the Hoven, right, that we were talking about earlier, is it possible that it hung out with them because they were more of a calm people, and it got really angry that there were outsiders? I mean, it's very possible, right? And that's the whole idea that, you know, it might have ripped that pioneer's face off, or that settler's face off. It might have just been very angry. And depending on where you're at geographically, you're not going to be the same exact thing. If you take two twins and you separate them, and one grows up way over here and one grows up way over here, they're going to grow up with different experiences. Sure. So if the Sasquatch spread throughout the country, and there's different things like the skunk ape, or in this case, the Mogollon monster, it's just a different entity. That's my two cents on it. It might be a part of a whole, but if it is a part of a whole, the Mogollon monster still has a legacy of its own.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Well,
hashtag panic steak.
I gotta say, I feel pretty foolish now thinking that was a documentary. That was not. Indeed, that was a film. But, you know, that just brings back the point around here, Bob, where we got different variations of these entities, right? And some are good, some are bad. It's really interesting how that goes. Now, what if you're walking, Bob, and you're in the woods and you see a Sasquatch? What should you really do? I mean,
There's protocol. You're supposed to talk to them and discuss with them that you mean them no harm.
Okay.
And there's protocol. Don't antagonize it, because that Sasquatch is going to rip your arms off.
That's like the beef jerky commercials.
Yeah, no, like don't mess with the Sasquatch. Yeah. You got to be gentle and kind and make sure you let it know that it's not there. You know, you're supposed to smack like a tree stump. Some people say that's like the acceptable way to communicate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I just didn't know, because if you do run into one, people never think they're going to run into one. And it's always, people search for these creatures, right? These entities.
Yeah, there's
some never find them whatsoever. All it takes is some schmuck walking in the woods one day on a hike, and then you see one of these things. So, are pictures allowed? Because I would like to take a picture. There has been no good pictures out there of some of these entities, so it'd be nice to have maybe a nice picture. Do I ask permission first, or do I just do it?
I would probably ask permission first.
Really? What they say? No.
I don't want. Well, don't take a picture. You're going to anger the thing. You're in that thing's like home, man. If I broke into your house and been like, "Hey, dude, I'm going to not ask you, but I'm going to take a picture of you," you're probably going to fight me.
I would say, make sure you charge the price for those pictures.
Well, do you have any closing words for the show tonight?
The closing words are: be careful out there in the woods, and troop masters out there for the scouts, get some Sasquatch protocol.
All right, folks, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. To my mom and dad and my two nieces, Riley and Josie, who might be listening right now, I just want to wish you guys sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody, and remember, the most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Good night, everybody.
memoriam development.